You're listening to the Wordslinger Podcast, episode 93, RV Life on Their Terms with Joe and Kate Russo.
Writing a book. It can be the best way to build or grow your business, or to simply tell the story that you wish to tell. Learn how to write your book in 30 days or less. Pick up 30-day offer today from Amazon, Apple iBooks, or other online retailers.
It's the Word Slinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey everybody, this is Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. Thank you so much for tuning in. I just got back from NINC, that's Novelist Inc., their masterclass that they run. Big, huge conference, a big publishing and author conference. And they've been running it for the past few years in St. Pete's Beach, Florida. St. Petersburg, Florida. That's it's gorgeous. We were at the Tradewind Resort, which was right on the Gulf, and as you know, I live in Texas. I live in the Houston area. I know the Gulf, but this was a Gulf much different than what I'm used to. Much cleaner, much nicer. Had a great time. I was there with the team from Draft to Digital, and we really enjoyed meeting everyone. So for those of you who are listening who are from NINC, thank you so much for having us there and for all the meet and greets. It was a wonderful time. I'm glad we made all those connections. It was a very productive week, and a lot of partying, I have to tell you. more than this Wordslinger is traditionally used to. Lots of late nights. Got to do a lot of karaoke, that sort of thing. It was a lot of fun. Met some fantastic people. Made some great connections. Draft to Digital sponsored the event in part. We were one of the sponsors. We sponsored a lunch on one day, which was actually very good. But it was a great meet and greet opportunity. So hello to everyone from NINC, and I yearn to join your ranks. I will join your ranks. I think it's actually a great organization to be a part of. If you're an author and you you meet the qualifications, you need to be a part of NINC. Just going to put it out there. The newsletter they send alone is worth it, but that conference, it's worth everything it takes to get there each year. The people you'll meet and connect with, fantastic. So, enough about that. Now, I'm excited. I got this has been a very productive week for me. Now, just to let you know, I just interviewed Michael Bunker, who is an author who is he lives a very simple life. That's the best way to describe it, I think. It's very a lot of people kind of confuse him with being Amish because of his lifestyle. He is not Amish, we have determined. But that interview is coming up very soon. I want you to stick around for that because it is a very good interview. I'm very excited about how that went. But I bring it up only to say, only so that I can also bring up that he just recently sponsored the show through Patreon with a Patreon commitment. So thank you, Michael, if you're listening. I really appreciate that. I try to call everyone out and thank them profusely for any support they give the show. And I appreciate that, man. I also, this week, have a voicemail, and I will answer this question before we get to our fantastic guests. I just want to make sure that I answer this because it's a good question. So let's cue that up. And this comes from Robert Hedgewood.
Mr. Tomlinson, I enjoy your podcast. I listen to all three on a fairly regular basis. But I had a question. If you recall in the novel, The Prince of Tides, the landscape, Tidewater region, its bays, its inlets, its changes in weather, its landscape, functions very much like character. It's interesting. It draws you into the story until you start meeting other people. Now, I've tried this a few times, but my places as character tend to end up as travelogues that I cut because they don't do what they're supposed to do. They don't draw you into the story. They don't really function the way I had hoped they would function. So perhaps you could answer the question of how do you write place as character? Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Robert. And that's actually a fantastic question. It's one I've answered in a couple of interviews before, I believe. But here's how I approach it. The way you make place feel like character is to talk almost exclusively in terms of emotion. So how does the place make you feel? The details are important when you're talking about location, but not every detail belongs. So you're going to have to practice a little bit of discernment here. What details will evoke or support the emotion you want the reader to feel when you write that scene? And I don't have any ready examples of this, unfortunately. I think because I don't... Typically, when you hear someone talk about writing a location as a sort of character, they're talking about places that are already iconic, like New York City or Paris, things that you can evoke emotion very quickly and easily just by bringing up the hustle and bustle of the place, the iconic scenery, the Statue of Liberty and the Eiffel Tower, that sort of thing. When you're trying to evoke that sort of feeling in a place that the reader may not have experienced or may not have encountered in other fiction and television or movies or whatever, what you need to focus on are the details that support the emotional position you're taking there. How do you feel when you're standing in this place, and what can support that feeling? So if you're standing, on a beach, a rock-strewn beach staring out the ocean, the typical feeling that people evoke with that is one of sort of brooding emotion, this sort of deeper emotion, sadness at times, that sort of thing. But you can actually turn that around by having, say, a family show up on the beach, kids running and playing, laughing loudly, the sound of seagulls, the sound of, local wildlife, that sort of thing. So to change the tone and to make the place more relatable to the reader, what you really want to focus on is the emotion. So I hope that helps. If it doesn't, let me know, and I can go into more detail than I'm able to with the few minutes we have in the podcast. But in large part, I think that's how you define any character, really, whether it's a character of place or the human characters in your story or the even sort of inanimate objects or animals or anyone else. What we humans relate to most is emotion. And if you can find a way to evoke that emotion in that place, then that place will become much more significant to the reader. So, all right. Well, I'm glad we got that question. Thanks, Robert, for that. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me if you want. You can go to wordslingerpodcast.com. This is what Robert did. He went to wordslingerpodcast.com and he used the SpeakPipe app that's right there on the site. And he left me a voicemail. Now, you can also leave a more traditional voicemail if leaving them on the website is difficult, or sometimes it glitches out, and I understand. But you can call me at 281-809-WORD. That's 281-809-9673. Leave me a voicemail. I'll play that on the air. And you can also email me from the website. Just click on the contact button. Send me an email about anything you like. If it's something if you don't want me to play anything on air, by the way, just say so. I understand. Or read anything, that's fine too. But if you have questions about writing, about anything really, something maybe one of my guests has discussed in the past, I can always run questions back by them and give you the answers. But writing and entrepreneurship are kind of my bailiwick. If you want to talk about that, marketing in general, I can help. So. Hope you think of me when you have a question. So, all right. Beyond that, what we have today is a fantastic interview. As you know, should know by now, my wife and I are moving into an RV full time. Now, here's the dope on that. We are we're just about done with our apartment. I know I say this like every episode, but we still have to work. We still have to stick out the lease, right? The lease actually ends on October 12th. Here's what we've decided to do, and everyone's going to roll their eyes, and I'm sorry, but it works for us. It helps us, but my in-laws live very close to us. They're about a block or so away from us. We're actually going to move in with them while we're getting the RV ready. So now that we have it back from maintenance, we haven't really had an opportunity to start moving things over to it and getting it set up and taking some things out that we don't really need, extra weight we don't really need. And it would be a lot easier to do that if we're not actually living in it at the time. So we're going to take a small break between the apartment and RV, stay with my in-laws, her parents. They're wonderful people. I love them. No problem at all. And then we're gonna hop right into the RV and get going just in time for Thanksgiving. And I promise, this is the timeline. We're going to do it. But from that point forward, we live in the RV full time. Actually, we'll be living in it starting around November, I believe the 10th or 11th. We take a road trip to this escapees thing that we're attending. And from that point forward, we live in it. So basically, half of October, we're going to be living with the in-laws. Half of October and a little bit of November. It saves us some rent, saves us, you know, gives us a little extra money for gas, which we will need because it's an RV. But that's it. That's the plan. Now, that's cool and all, but today I'm actually talking to two people who already live the RV lifestyle that Kara and I are trying to live. And it was very cool to get to talk to Joe and Kate because, you know, first of all, they're wonderful people. But they're already out there doing this, and they left behind their careers and started all new careers to do this. So these are entrepreneurs who have figured out how to make their passion their life and vice versa. So I'm not going to hold you up on this anymore because we're already quite a ways in, but let's get to this interview now with Joe and Kate Russo. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Now, if you've been a listener to my show for any length of time, you've probably heard me talk about something that my wife and I are planning to do. Not just planning. I mean, we're already actively doing this. We've bought an RV. We're downsizing. We sold our home. We're downsizing. We're moving into the RV full time in October. So I don't know when you're listening to this, but October 2016, that's when all the magic happens. It actually happens on my birthday, October 12th, 2016. We'll be moving in full time. And the idea is to travel and write and do all the things we do, but do them in a much smaller space with a much bigger front yard. So if you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that about me. And I'm very excited to talk to people who are already doing this. And today I'm chatting with Joe and Kate Russo. And they have actually already done everything I just described. They're already on the road. And they're on the road right now. So Joe and Kate, I welcome you to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having us, Kevin.
I love connecting with people who are already accomplishing the things that I'm out to accomplish. And it doesn't matter what that happens to be. And in this sense, the whole RV lifestyle, RV living, that's something, you know, it's interesting. Since my wife and I announced publicly that we were going to be doing this, we've had so many people approach us saying, I want to do that, I'm going to do that, or I already did that. So it's a very popular thing. So why don't we start by, you know, you guys telling me how you got into it.
I'll let Kate take care of that part. She was the one that really got the ball rolling.
I did come up with the idea after all. Yeah,
my wife did the same.
Well, we are originally from California, okay. And we had both planned on leaving California at one point, but we could never figure out where to go exactly. And we didn't want to end up in a situation where we moved to a new state, new city, but doing sort of living the same life that we were living in California.
Yeah.
So we, one day, it was Mother's Day weekend, I came up with the idea of, let's just, you know, move into an RV, finally leave our corporate jobs and travel around the country and figure out where we want to go.
Yeah.
And just spend some time doing that. And as we started researching it more, we realized there were so many people already doing it and there were some great resources out there. And it just seemed like a great way for us to, you know, be free, do something we love, which is to travel.
Yeah.
And try to make a living and support ourselves doing that.
Now, I will say Kate left out a few details, which are, and I think the big one for us was, both of us we're kind of in this cycle of, you know, go to work every day, spend all day at work, leave work, come home, watch some TV, go to bed, and, you know, rinse and repeat.
I'm familiar
and
with it.
And the thing, yeah, the thing we had come to realize is we were spending more time with people at work than we were each other. And we wanted to be able to spend more time together and really live our lives and not be dictated how much vacation we could have and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very familiar sounding story, by the way. The work, come home, watch TV. And these are the things that my wife and I actually, we've lamented. And I think it's interesting, though, because the bio you supplied me, says that you guys quit your jobs and went and did this. So that's the first question anyone ever asked me. So let's just jump right into it. Like, what are you guys doing for income now that you're on the road full time?
Well, initially when we started doing it, we planned to be on the road for a year. Okay. We'd saved up for that. And when we started talking, what we would initially tell people is that we're taking a year off from work. And at the end of the year, we're going to find a place to settle down and go back to work. Well, I would say a couple months into that, we realized, or even a couple weeks, Kate's over here shaking her head at me. A couple weeks into this trip, we realized we need to be able to keep this going because a year just isn't going to be long enough.
Right.
And we have our website, wertherussos.com. We have a YouTube channel, We're the Russos. And that's how we're making most of our income right now.
Really?
One of the interesting things on our site is we get a lot of questions from people about how we support ourselves and everything else. So what we've started doing is every month we report what our expenses are. Mm-hmm. So that is a huge thing. People try to figure out how much it's going to cost them to live on the road.
Right.
But we also publish our income. So we're very open with it. And last month in July, we made almost $1,300, okay. Which our monthly expenses are about $2,700-$2,800 a month. So we're almost at 50%. We hope by the end of the year, we're actually going to be supporting ourselves.
Okay. And so what, you're living off of savings mostly, or how's everything happening?
Correct. So the nice thing was, when we were in, we started in Los Angeles, and when we set our budget was set at Los Angeles cost of living.
Okay.
So the year of travel that we saved up for has more than covered, you know, what we've done now. And now that we're making money, we're stretching that even further. So, you know, hopefully by the time we get to the end of the year, we are good to go and we're supporting ourselves.
Yeah. And that, I know that's the biggest, scariest challenge for anybody thinking of doing this. I mean, it was something we talked about a lot because, you know, my book income is pretty good, but it's not necessarily, so, you know, keep two full grown adults alive good. And at times. And so that conversation comes up a lot, but now we have some other means. So it's helping a lot. So how are you? Okay, you've got the YouTube channel and the blog and everything, and everything looks great, by the way. I'm on the site right now. So how do you promote yourselves? Like, how are you getting out there and finding an audience for this?
Our main focus has always been on creating really good content.
Okay.
That people would find useful and helpful. And all of our stuff that we've grown has been organic. So like, if you look at our YouTube subscribers, we just hit 5,000 subscribers.
Okay.
And that's all organic, people spreading our content. You know, when you make good content, people will share it.
Right.
And then they start sharing our content or referencing our stuff as a resource. And that's how we've been able to build and grow our audience. And it's really exciting to see because, you know, in December of 2015, we had under 100 subscribers on YouTube, and to be able to hit over 5,000 organically in this amount of time, I think is really exciting for us. And what we love more than anything is the community that has built and grown around our sort of brand and our YouTube channel and how much support we get from them.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, there's always that saying, if you build it, they will come.
Right.
And we were putting out some videos here and there, and we'd get a couple hits, but it wasn't until we really started looking at this more of a business rather than a hobby and focusing a lot more on, you know, trying to put out videos 6-7 times a week, putting up articles on a regular basis and everything else, that we really started to generate traffic. And I will say that currently we probably work more hours now than we ever did in corporate America. But, you know, it's one of, and I, you probably realize this, but it's one of those things that at, the more we work, the more we see our everything, like YouTube channel and everything growing.
Yeah.
So it's very rewarding for us.
Yeah, it is. It's nice to, I mean, that's the entrepreneur's curse, right? I mean, you leave corporate America because you don't want to be enslaved to the, to that cubicle. And then you end up putting in, you know, four times as many hours on your own business. But what's great, and it sounds like you guys are seeing this, but like all that work goes toward your success rather than someone else's success.
Absolutely. Except for the 40% of our ad revenue we give back to YouTube.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, we could do, I mean, I'm sure we could go into in-depth detail about YouTube's practices, but I'm hoping to eventually come up with, I've been terrible about YouTube. I've tried to keep something up regularly, and it's just overwhelming with all the other projects and work and podcasts and everything that I do. So I haven't come up with a nice rhythm for YouTube content yet. I'll just link to
your
stuff.
Yeah, you sort of have to, we had to make the decision, like, do we focus on YouTube or do we focus on the website? And right now, you know, all of our focus is on YouTube. We still maintain the website and have fresh content weekly, but not nearly to the, where we would like it to be.
Right.
But it's hard to maintain all of those things.
Well, it's almost as if you can almost, I mean, not maybe not to a huge degree, but I mean, you can almost monetize YouTube from the start, whereas you have to build an audience large enough to sustain you before you can really monetize an actual website or blog. So it seems like it would be easier to focus on YouTube content-wise. Is that, am I really far off the mark with that?
No, I would say YouTube is a lot easier to monetize, like you said.
Yeah.
And not only that, but you know, we might be getting too into the weeds here, but video ads on YouTube pay a much higher CPM than display ads on your website.
Yeah.
So it's you almost need to have like 10x the number of people on your site to make the same amount of money you do on YouTube.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation, because I've talked to a lot of people who have YouTube channels that sort of lament that, you know, it's not as big a profit center as it could be. But it is worth pointing that out, because, you know, if you're trying to monetize, say, a blog or let's just say a podcast, you don't really get as big a return. And so it is kind of nice that they work with you at that point for at least that much, even with a 40% take.
Yes, that's true. And what I'm looking at is I look at all the profit after the take. So even the CPM we're getting after they take their share is still, you know, 10x higher than what we're getting on our display ads.
Oh, that's pretty impressive. Okay. All right. Yeah. Something to keep in mind. I think the Wordslinger will have to start working on YouTube. I don't know how I'm going to do it yet. Because I like money. Talking about the business side of this makes me curious, because I don't know what your backgrounds were prior to this. So what were your careers before you started doing this? And how have those helped you?
So I spent 10 years at a company in advertising and product development.
Okay.
And Kate?
Yeah, and my background is in data analytics and digital marketing.
Oh, my God.
So that definitely helped translate to what we're doing.
I envy both of you.
Yeah, I was actually the person who at the company was building and designing the monetization system for our video products online.
Oh.
So this is all my wheelhouse, and it's fun to watch and do it myself now.
Yeah.
But it's funny, now we're talking about today maybe hundreds of dollars rather than millions of dollars.
Right. Right. Oh, man. Okay. See, those are huge advantages the two of you have. So, I mean, I come from a marketing background, but, you know, when it came to the data and analytics and, you know, actually building these monetization tools, you know, that wasn't me. That was someone I hired or someone that I worked with. So I wish I had that advantage personally. Pretty impressive.
Well, we wish.
Go ahead.
We wish we knew how to write a book because we're trying, and man, it's difficult.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So here's what you just did. You opened up mutual opportunity, as we like to refer to it. So maybe we'll just all have to talk to each other later and figure out how we can help each other.
Absolutely.
What would your book be about? What are you thinking of? And I recommend books for everyone, by the way.
I think right now we have two on the burner. One is we want to write about our first year on the road.
Okay.
Then kind of like the walk series.
Yeah.
And then I have my own little pet project, which is a kind of like a doomsday style book.
Okay. Like a preppers kind of thing?
Yeah, it might fall under that, but it's more about, let's say, economic collapse and what might happen and what this family has to go through in their RV.
Okay, so fiction.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Now you're in my wheelhouse. Okay. And I don't know if I've told you guys, but since we set all this up, I actually got invited to be the director of marketing for Draft Digital. So we can help you get that distributed very widely. So that's
oh,
wow. A free plug for my company. Yeah. So that's cool. Okay. Well, we'll talk. We'll talk all about that. And I think you've got, and by the way, the whole doomsday, post-apocalyptic landscape stuff is very popular. So I think you can leverage that. You've got the YouTube channel. That seems to be a primary focus. What are some of the challenges you guys have faced in this so far? Let's back it up. Not just in the product that you're creating, but I mean in general, the RV lifestyle. Like, what are some of the biggest challenges you've had to face and overcome?
I would say the big one was early on, since this is a business, or we've turned it into a business. There was a big divide between Kate and myself. When we first started on the road, I had spent 10 years at the same company and I was dying to get out.
Yeah.
Once I was out, I was in vacation mode. I just wanted to sit down, read my books,
yeah,
relax. And Kate, she kind of switched over a lot faster than I did into work mode. And being around your spouse 24/7 in a 200 square foot motorhome really emphasizes the need to have good communication between
right.
each other.
Right.
And there was a point at which Kate pulled off the road as we were driving someplace and said, look, we need to hash a few things out.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was the biggest shock. It's sort of adjustment period is when you're so used to spending so few hours together.
Yeah.
To being constantly next to each other with very little room to escape. We had to work some things out. But once we did that, it has really made our relationship stronger and made us both better communicators.
Yeah. And I will say, one of the things people told us, and we'll tell you and your wife this as well, is everyone said slow down when you hit the road.
Yeah.
And we felt like we had to see the entire country in a year.
Yeah.
And have realized that as we slow down and we really take in the sights and get to know people in the cities we're visiting, it has become such a better experience than spending 5 days in a state and while we run off to the next one.
Right. Yeah. We've only had a small taste of that lifestyle so far in that my watch is ringing. We've taken a couple of extended trips and gone great distances. And one of the things that struck me right away, because I've worked remotely. I've worked, for myself for the most part, for most of my career. I have routines and disciplines that I adhere to. And while we were traveling, all that kind of fell away. The actual act of traveling kind of knocked me off track. And so I had to readjust how I was doing things. And so I think the way this ties back, I think, is that, we've had to adjust our thinking just in the short term about how we operate and interact with each other. And, we're always in a rush, I think it'll be much easier when we're in full time. But I could see how it would be very disruptive to your life as a whole, and especially your work, if your mentality is, okay, we're here for, 2 weeks, and then we got to get back on the road for, 10 hours a day for 3 or 4 days, you know? I mean, I could see where that would disrupt things.
Oh, yeah. And we weren't even spending 2 weeks in this place. We were spending like 1 to 2 days.
Oh, yeah.
And then we would drive.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because how do you even unwind?
You don't. Well, you know, when we started, we gave ourselves a year. And so we were in a big rush to see everything. And then once we realized that we want to keep doing this, we made the changes and shifted our way of traveling. And now we don't drive more than 150 to 200 miles when we do move. And we try not to move, more frequently than once a week.
Right. What region of the country are you primarily in right now?
We've been in the Midwest. So we unexpectedly summered in Wisconsin, which was beautiful. And we're currently in Indiana on a gorgeous, large property right along a creek, and it's fantastic out here.
Very cool. I those are places where Kara and I have kind of looked at maps and thought, you know, I wonder if there's anything there we'll want to explore. And I'm guessing there is, but I can tell you Kansas is not a fun state to drive through.
If you get to Kansas.
Okay, let me be fair. We were driving through, you know, farm roads, and it was just miles and miles and miles of nothing but, you know, farms and wind farms and, you know, on these narrow two-lane roads in our giant rig. And so it was a little stressful. So there you go, free tip.
Now, what kind of RV did you guys get?
We got a Thor Challenger. It's a 38-foot motor coach.
Okay.
So it's pretty big.
Fairly decent size. Yeah,
it's pretty big. I mean, I'm driving like a skyscraper around everywhere I go. And you know, my wife is a great navigator, and she wants us to kind of take in the scenery as much as possible. So, you know, we took the scenic routes, but scenic routes are sometimes end up not being quite so scenic.
Yeah.
When you've got a few hundred miles of farmland. So,
or you have a two-lane highway with no shoulder and
that's
a drop-off.
Exactly right, man. Those scared the crap out of me. That was our inaugural run, by the way. We did like 2,800 miles of round trip, and most of the roads were like that. So what was great about it was by the time I was done, I was a pro at driving this thing, you know. Now we got to get my wife up to speed on it, but, I mean, I was good.
There you go.
So, now I know when the first time we took a really long trip in this, I mean, it really did scare the crap out of me pretty much the entire drive. Was there an adjustment for you when you took on your rig?
I would say there was a bit of an adjustment. I mean, we both grew up in Los Angeles, so we were used to like Carmageddon.
Yeah.
And driving a RV through that kind of traffic and those kinds of streets really gets you up to speed fairly quickly. I think we did a few test runs around the neighborhood and did a quick little camping trip. But once we get on the road, you get into that rhythm pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And it's fairly easy.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. And I'm looking forward to getting into that rhythm.
I will say that it was before we ever test drove our first RV, we were really scared about taking one out and crashing it or something else. And we talked to a lot of people that don't even test drive an RV before they buy it because they're scared of it.
Right.
And I would, you know, all of your listeners who are thinking about buying an RV, I would say go out and test drive as many as you can, just like if you're buying a car.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was in that first group, by the way. We kept looking at them, and we were just enchanted by them, but I never did test drive one until we bought this one. And I wish I had, but I mean, it worked out okay. The test drive was actually, nothing to it. I mean, it was pleasant, but then you don't really think about, you know, road conditions and all the things that can go wrong later. But yeah, I wish I had actually test driven it a little more, but that's good advice. So, okay, is there anything guiding your route? Are you you guys sticking to some kind of plan, or is it just throw a dart at a map?
Yeah, so we have Google Maps where we start everything that we would possibly want to see around the country.
Oh, cool.
And then you know, a lot of people like to follow the weather, and we try to, nice weather.
Yeah.
But, you know, we also have family events that we have to go to. So we have a family wedding in Ohio.
Right.
And so we know that eventually we got to make it to Ohio. So we'll look at the map and see different routes that we can take to get there and see what things we have starred along the way that we can go see before we get there.
Yeah. And another thing we try to do is we try to find big events around the country.
Yeah.
We were just at the Oshkosh Air Show.
Oh, very cool.
And we're going to a D-Day reenactment in Ohio. So we try to find stuff like that. We'll put it on the map, and we'll see what's between us and there.
Yeah.
And what we can see and what we can do.
That's a cool way to do it. And I'd rather do it that way. And Kara and I are pretty good about that. Like there are big events we're planning to attend. So we'll meander that way and then just stop at things in between. She's a very good planner, and I'm not when it comes to travel. Like I just like to hop in and drive. So we work well together, because as we're going along, if we see something, you know, that isn't quite on the plan, we can go ahead and stop and enjoy it. But otherwise, she keeps us on track. So that's going to become a lot more important later, I'm sure. I see. Okay. Now I'm scanning through your website, by the way, and I see that you guys tow a vehicle behind you. Do you still do that?
Or do.
Okay. So is that, I haven't done that yet in the RV, so I'm kind of scared about it. Yeah. How tough was it to adjust to having even more length?
Not hard at all. It was going from driving the RV without a vehicle to a towing vehicle felt the same for me.
Really?
Okay. And the night. Yeah. And actually we find switching lanes easier in the RV with a tow car than sometimes just driving our Jeep around. Because people, for the most part, are very courteous. And when you put your turn signal on, they'll make room to let you in. And so we find it really easy to drive around. There have only been, I think, once or twice where, you know, you go down a road and you can't turn around unless you detach.
Yeah.
And that's when it gets a little hairy that you're off on the side of the road trying to disconnect your tow car so you can turn around.
Yeah, I think what people don't really think about or realize is when you're towing a car behind the motorhome, unless it's on a trailer, there you can't reverse. So you're now driving a giant RV that you cannot back up unless you detach the tow car. So there's more planning that goes into things. It's like when you pull into a parking lot or that, making sure you have a way out without having to reverse. It just, once you switch your method of thinking a little bit, it's really easy.
Yeah. Oh man, I hadn't even thought about that. So that's good. we don't know what we're going to be towing yet. We have a small car, we just bought a Vespa, which I'm going to somehow attach to the back of this thing. And I don't know how yet.
Nice.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. That one's cool. I'm excited about that one. I've wanted a Vespa for a long time. Actually, I wanted a motorcycle, and the Vespa was the compromise. So, because Kara feels like she could do a Vespa. So, okay. All right. So how do you handle things like, we overpack. I mean, I think we can't have too much stuff. And I've got to go through and clear out a lot of what we are rolling around with in the RV already. So how do you handle, like, the organization and, you know, all the stuff that you need to live?
Yeah, so it worked out really well for us when we moved into the RV, because the home that we sold had a driveway long enough for us to park our RV.
Oh,
so we simply put everything outside the RV and then started moving things in. And as we realized certain things wouldn't fit, we had to make a decision. Do we keep it or do we let it go?
Yeah.
And we let a lot of stuff go. And that's the one great thing we love about this lifestyle, is you start to focus on keeping really good quality stuff. So instead of having like five belts, you keep the one really good belt you have.
Right.
And you stop accumulating stuff. Like as we've been traveling around the country for a year, we haven't purchased anything really to add to the house. We're actually purging and getting even rid of more stuff. So you realize what you have room for, and then you make the decision of what to keep and what to take with you.
And I will say it's difficult when you sit down and you're trying to think about this life you're going to have in the RV and what things you think you need and what you don't. And I think the best example for us is we're like, we're never going to use a crock pot. So we got rid of our old one. Mm-hmm. And then we get on the road and said, you know, the best thing we could have right now is a crock pot. So we had to get another one.
Right.
And it's just, it's little things like that, but also being cognizant of your carrying capacity in the RV, because the RV can only carry so much weight.
Right.
And, you know, once we got all loaded up, full tank of water, gas, everything, we went to a truck stop and got weighed to make sure we weren't overloaded, because that becomes a very dangerous situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear about things like that, and I don't, it's not, like, in my head yet. Like, I have to force myself to start thinking in those terms, because we think in terms of, here's what we need, you know, this is something I've discussed before, but there was this idea at first that, you know, how are we going to replicate our lifestyle in the RV, which was the wrong way to think, right? We're not, the whole point is to not replicate the life you already have and just make it mobile. I mean, you want to reconstruct yourself. So we've got a lot of things we're still kind of getting rid of. We're in a small one-bedroom apartment right now, and it's still it's still got a lot of stuff that we're downsizing. So that whole weight thing is something I don't think about very often, though. I need to get my head in that.
Yeah, that's the number one concern for us, even if we're looking at other RVs as, you know, potential, because we're actually talking about downsizing.
Oh, really? Okay.
Our current coach is 29 feet. And we're looking at some of the smaller, like 24 footers, and even below that.
So, what's prompting that?
A lot of it is we like to go kind of really out of the way places. A lot of BLM and Forest Service camping and boondocking off the grid, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And having a tall, long motor coach and trying to get into some of those places is sometimes impossible. And like, we don't want to take our RV down a lot of these fire roads and everything else.
Yeah.
So we'd like to be more nimble, more able to get places, and just have, we feel it would make our lives a lot easier. And we found that there's actually a lot of space in the RV now we don't even use. We just need a place to be able to work, cook, sleep comfortably, and, you know, have a fairly nice sized bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love a bigger bathroom than the one we have. okay. So what about like maintenance and that sort of thing? Because as an example, we put our RV in for some maintenance and a few repairs, and it's been almost 2 months, and we're actually having trouble getting them to respond and tell us when we'll have it back. So I'm curious, if you're living in it full time, like how you handle that sort of thing, like. If you need maintenance or repairs, like what's the procedure?
I think that's a great point to bring up, because for us, at least with Newmar and having to get work done with a Newmar, they're very responsive, and they make it a point that if you take your coach in to get repairs and you need parts, as long as the part is available, they will overnight it to where you're getting work done.
Okay.
And what we've found is, we have to plan ahead for different things. Like, we just fell out of warranty on our coach, but when we were in warranty and items would come up, we'd start calling a few states ahead to see what the timelines were, because you probably ran into this, but a lot of places that do motorhome maintenance can be scheduled months out in advance.
Right.
So unless it's an emergency, it's stuff we plan for. We actually took our coach to the Newmar factory to have some work done, and ended up spending a couple weeks there because we found different little things that would crop up, and they were taking care of those for us. But I would say the biggest thing for us is I'm a very handy person, and I brought a lot of tools with me. So when things do pop up, most of the time they're things I can resolve on my own.
Right.
And I even do my own oil changes in that on the RV and the generator. So we try to do as much as possible, but when we do have to go in, we plan it out as far ahead as possible.
Yeah.
And when you get work done at Newmar, they don't take your coach overnight. So we still get to sleep in our coach at night, and then they take it during the day to work on it. And that's the same we had with Newmar service dealers around the country,
mm-hmm.
is they'll get the work done that same day, and if they don't, they'll give the coaches back to us.
Yeah, and what I found is when calling to make the appointment, being very clear with them that you are full-timers,
mm-hmm.
And Pat, your home for 2 months. I will bring it into you when you are ready and scheduled to work on it, because you know the motorhome right now is just sitting there.
Right, I know.
Yeah, so it's having that conversation, being upfront with people, and making sure they understand what's going to happen, or you go somewhere else.
Yeah. Okay. It was kind of funny because, you know, we called, set up an appointment 2 weeks in advance to take it in, and I get there and they say, okay, it'll go in 2 weeks from now. And I'm like, well, why did I bother with an appointment? Like, I made an appointment just to drop it off so that it could wait for 2 weeks to go in. So yeah, I'm a pretty handy guy. So I'm going to teach myself how to do the oil changes on everything. And, you know, all the routine maintenance, I'm fairly sure I can handle. It's just stuff like, you know, we had an issue with the little motorized drop-down bunk in the front of it has gone off rails or something. So, you know, there's some things that I can fix and some things that I feel more comfortable with someone else fixing. So those are really challenges.
Yeah, okay. And I will say a great example is when we were in Florida, we were having some work done. And there was one part that was going to take about 6 weeks to come in. So we said, okay, you know, get everything done that you can. And we spent the next 6 weeks tooling around Florida, came back in, they replaced it in an hour, and we were good to go.
Okay, that's a good way to look at it, rather than holding it while they wait for the part. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, look, I know you guys are you got to get back to business and life. I'm really excited about what you guys do. I follow you on Twitter. That's where we connected. I'm very, I'm following a lot of people these days, but I'm glad to meet people who are doing this successfully. So I really wish you the absolute best. I hope you start hitting, you know, the big numbers very soon. I think you can. And hopefully this will help. So thanks so much for spending the time with me.
Yeah. Thank you for having us. And we can't wait to connect with you on, some of the stuff you're doing and some of the stuff we're trying to do.
Yeah, I think we definitely need to talk. I think we can be mutually beneficial to each other. So let's do that. And hopefully when Kara and I are out full time on the road, we can, you know, we can hook up somewhere out in a campsite and just, you know, get to know each other. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, we love connecting with people. So
it's a lot of fun.
Let us know when you start off, because you said October 12th.
Yeah, well, that's the official date everything starts, because that's the date the apartment is no longer leased out to us. So we'll be living in it probably before then, but I mean, that's the date I give everyone, because it's my birthday. So
sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks for chatting with me. Everyone else, please stick around. You know, I'm going to wrap things up at the end of the show. We'll give you some more notes, some other information, I'm sure. Thanks a lot, guys, for being on, and talk to everyone soon. All right, that was my interview with Joe and Kate Russo. I hope you enjoyed that. I did a lot. I love talking to people who are doing this kind of thing. I mean, here's what's interesting. My wife and I had a conversation this morning. She was getting in her car to drive away, and we were standing outside the apartments, and I have Minnie with me, our little Chihuahua, who is awesome, by the way. But we're standing out there, and I noticed that the car next to her is parked in such a way that it's almost impossible for her to get into her car without dinging her door or whatever. And then that brought up like this wellspring of just irritations and emotions. The apartments we stay in, they're wonderful. They're actually very cool. They're very nice. They're new. And there are some really wonderful people who live here, but then there are also these people who are just entitled and inconsiderate. And, you know, some of them are more than just inconsiderate. They do things like, you know, there are these little lights mounted to the walls. Someone on the property likes to go and turn those so that they're aiming sideways instead of up and down. People don't pick up after their dogs. People, you know, leave trash. These door hangers that these idiots bring and hang on our doors, despite, you know, tons of signs saying no soliciting. Those things end up all over the place because no one cares to pick them up, throw away. So, you know, there are little hassles with living in an apartment complex. That's just the way life is. But there's this idea of broken window syndrome, and I don't know if you've heard of this, but in short, if you leave, the general idea is if in a neighborhood that's otherwise fine, someone breaks a window and that window remains unrepaired for long enough, it actually eventually escalates into much bigger problems for the neighborhood. But if you repair the windows, if you make sure things are maintained, if you make sure things are taken care of, then the general attitude of everyone in the neighborhood is that, you know, it's a clean, safe place that needs to be cared for. And so you have lower crime rates, you have lower vandalism rates. This is a real thing. And so that's the sort of thing that popped in my head this morning. Okay, what does that have to do with RV? the discussion we had was, in all the RV parks we've been to so far, there is a general attitude of everyone taking care of everything. There are always going to be people, especially in some parks are not as nice as others. Some areas of the world are not as nice as other areas. So there are always going to be people who don't take care of things. But in general, we've just met so many people who are clean and polite and, you know, they're handy, they're helpful. And we're just, you know, we've fallen in love with that sort of culture. And that's the sort of people we keep meeting out there. So that's one of the reasons we want to do this. We want to get on the road full time so that I can meet more people like that. And these are, you know, I get inspired by their stories and these things end up in books, funny enough. So anyway, that's kind of that's what makes this all exciting to me. We meet plenty of people like Joe and Kate out there. And Joe and Kate, if you're listening, thank you so much for being so wonderful and so generous with what you produce. With your time, I'm amazed at what you guys have accomplished. I have nothing but great things to hope for you, and I'm very grateful for everything you guys have produced. So thanks so much for being a part of the show. So if you have questions for me or for the Russos or for anyone else who has been on the show, please feel free. Reach out. Like I said earlier, you can call me at 281-809-WORD. That's 281-809-9673. Or you can go to wordslingerpodcast.com, click on the speak pipe button. It'll be on the right-hand side of the page, a little tab. You can leave a voicemail there. Or leave me an email. Go to the contact form on the page and just send me an email. I'm very cool with that. So any questions are fine. Any comments are fine. And please, if you enjoy the show, here's how you can help me. And I would ask, would you please go to iTunes, look for the Wordslinger podcast, and rate and review the show on iTunes. Every time we get one of those, first of all, I get a little notice that tells me that someone has reviewed the show. And that makes me very happy. But beyond making me happy, it helps other people discover the show. And I have such amazing and incredible guests that the world deserves to know the stories of these people. And these people deserve to have those stories reach more of an audience. We're a pretty strong audience. There's several thousand people listening to the show now. I think it's somewhere around 26,000 the last time I got numbers. And that's way, way up. That's way up from what it has been in the past. So thank you. If you're one of those, I really appreciate you being on board. This is a work of love, and I come back to it every week just because I enjoy talking to you guys so much and because I enjoy talking to the guests so much. So I appreciate that you are so supportive. So thank you so much for being a part of this. Thank you for the reviews in advance. And I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up now so you can get on with your weekend. Have a great weekend. We're finally getting fall here in the Houston, Texas area, just in time for us to start. We won't be leaving anytime soon, really. We've got a month or so to enjoy fall in the area. This is actually a great area of the world to be in during the fall, in my opinion. It's because it's nice and cool, but it's not. There's no snow. There's no there's none of that stuff to worry about. The stuff we'll worry about when we get up north later. So anyway, we're enjoying some cool weather right now. So I hope you have a fun, safe, happy weekend ahead and a week ahead. Depending on when you're listening, I hope you're having a fantastic day, a fantastic life. All my love to you and God bless, and I will see you next week.
Wordslinger.